This is a reading of the lecture cycle by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Spiritual Hierarchies and the Physical World. Lecture 4 is entitled The Work of the Spiritual Hierarchies and the Zodiac, given on April 13, 1909, in the evening. When we consider, as we did this morning, the conditions on ancient Saturn that are more transparent and less shrouded in illusion or Maya, we can better understand the redemption or further imprisonment of those beings we encountered yesterday in relation to the profoundly significant passage in the Divine Gita. You will recall that Saturn's development would have come to an end and everything would have been reabsorbed into the spiritual world if the spirits of personality had completely drawn into themselves the egg-shaped heat bodies and left nothing behind on ancient Saturn. Yet, as I pointed out, this did not happen. The spirits of personality compressed more intensively than they should have and left their seal on all of Saturn. They did not take everything back into themselves. Indeed, they left behind outwardly perceptible warmth bodies. What was the power working in the spirits of personality on ancient Saturn? It was the force we know today as the human power of thinking. The spirits of personality did nothing on ancient Saturn but exercise their power of thought. The warmth eggs were formed because they were able to call forth the idea of these eggs. The power of conceptual thought in the spirits of personality was thus far greater than in human beings today. For what kind of power does the conceptual capacity of contemporary humanity have? If we have an idea or thought today, we create a form only in the astral world. It goes no further. That is why the form cannot be verified in an outer physical way. But on ancient Saturn, the spirits of personality were mighty magicians. They formed and left behind the warmth eggs of Saturn through the power of their thinking. It was the power of the spirits of personality that caused the residue of ancient Saturn to be left behind. And this residue reappeared repeatedly even during the solar phase of evolution. Since what was formed into eggs was made out of the surroundings of Saturn, eggs that were then enchanted and chained to a further existence, we can now grasp the fact that an entity or being at the human stage creates forms from its surroundings. On this basis, the conditions are not yet so complicated, we can now present comprehensively what was said yesterday. Thus we can say, consider the Saturn fire, consider what was repeatedly spiritualized from the ancient Saturn fire, and then repeatedly retracted as inner soul fire, warm comfortableness, and then ascended to higher realms. In other words, consider how what was perceptible external warmth, that is, what densified into external warmth, had to be reborn so that it could reappear on the sun. Let us now look at the rest of what was described this morning. The beings of the spiritual hierarchies whom we call archangels, archangeloi, or fire spirits, achieved their human stage on the old sun. On the one hand, the warmth element densified itself to smoke or gas, so that the sun was a gaseous globe. On the other hand, it burned the gas, so that light streamed out into universal space. The archangels, or fire spirits, who lived in the streaming light, absorbed and then streamed out light, and lived in this process. I mentioned before that if you could have journeyed through the universe, you would have beheld the old sun shining toward you from a great distance. In the inner part of the old sun, you would have perceived various currents of gas permeating the whole body of the planet like a breathing process. Let us now, once more, hold this ancient Saturn and ancient Sun before our souls. We have seen that life and activity ruled in both of these planetary bodies. On old Saturn there was a forming and dissolving of egg-shaped structures. There were also residues left behind. Had one observed this internal activity on ancient Saturn, one would have said that Saturn was really a single living being. It really is as though it were a fully living being. It was alive and lived in and of itself, producing forms continuously out of its own life. This was even more so on the old Sun. We meet this planet as a unit with conditions alternating between the Sun's day and the Sun's night, a breathing in and out of light. If one could have observed it, everything would have given the impression of a universal body permeated with life, not of something dead. Everything that lives, however, that is permeated with activity and thus inwardly lively and constantly moving, owes its motion to the spiritual beings who direct and guide it. We mentioned that the spirits of personality produced the egg forms through their power of thought, thus implying that there must have been a substance available out of which the eggs could be shaped. But the spirits of personality, the archai, were unable to create the substance. We should bear in mind that something must exist to furnish the substance, that is, the undifferentiated warmth, the fire itself. The spirits of personality could only shape the warmth. The substance had to be provided from elsewhere. We must ask, what conceived the whole realm of Saturn, especially the spirits of personality, and what was the source of the warmth, substance, or fire element? It came from much higher spiritual beings who had achieved their human stage so far back in the past that they were already well beyond this stage on ancient Saturn. To form a clear image of the exalted beings who were necessary for the warmth, fire element on ancient Saturn, we must consider, by way of comparison, how the human being evolved, for human beings will also eventually become divine beings. We know, and have often mentioned, that human beings today consist of four members or bodies, physical, etheric, astral, and I, capital. This is the key to all spiritual science. We also know about humanity's future evolution. We know how the I, working from within, gradually transforms the astral body so that the I finally gains complete mastery over it. We know, too, that when the astral body has been thus transformed, we say that it contains spirit self, or manas. An astral body ruled by the I is spirit self, or manas. The same applies to the ether body. When the I works even more powerfully still, it can overcome the opposing forces of the ether body. The transformed ether body then becomes the life spirit, or buddhi. Finally, when the I gains mastery over the physical body, when the most powerfully opposing forces of the physical body are also overcome, the human being bears within it the spirit human, the spiritual body, or Atman. In transforming one's physical body into Atman, or spiritual body, one thus becomes sevenfold. Outwardly, the physical body appears as a physical body, but inwardly it is completely controlled and permeated by the I. At this stage, the physical body is both physical body and Atman. The ether body is both ether body and life spirit, or buddhi, and the astral body is both astral body and spirit self, or manas. The I has now become ruler over all of the other members. Thus, out of its own forces, humanity evolves to higher stages of development. People strive toward their own deification, as the friend and pupil of St. Paul, Dionysius the Areopagite, called it. But this is not the end of human development. Once human beings have reached the stage of complete mastery of the physical body, still higher stages of development await them. The process continues higher and higher. We can look up to sublime beings who, dwelling in exalted spiritual heights, become ever mightier. How do such beings become greater? At first, they require something from the world. Later, they develop so that they can give something. The fundamental spirit and purpose of development is that one proceeds from taking to giving. We can find an analogy in human development between birth and death. Children are helpless and must accept help from individuals in their surroundings. But gradually, they outgrow this helplessness and become helpers in their own circle. The same is true of the grand span of human development in the universe. Humanity was already present in its earliest physical form on ancient Saturn, where this being received only the first foundation of human nature. This continued during the old sun and old moon periods. On Earth, however, humanity was given the eye, and now human beings are gradually preparing themselves so that the eye can work within the astral, etheric, and physical bodies. In this way, we become beings who can give cosmically. As beings, we gradually grow into the cosmic and develop the capacity for universal giving. That is, we develop from taking to giving. You have an example of this in the beings we spoke of this morning, the archangels or archangeloi. On the old sun, the archangels had already developed to where they could produce light in the universe. The course of development moves from taking to giving. This activity of giving, in fact, can assume considerable proportions. When some beings, for instance, merely give their thoughts, this still denotes a somewhat restricted activity of giving. For whoever gives thoughts, even if one has many thoughts, and goes away, leaves the situation as it was before. In a higher sense, nothing visible, nothing substantial has been produced. But then a time came when beings could give more than thoughts or the like. They were able to bestow far more. Indeed, they could give what the spirits of personality needed on old Saturn, the substance of warmth fire. Who were the beings who had reached such an exalted stage of development that they could let the warmth fire substance on ancient Saturn stream from their own bodies? They were known as the Thrones. We can see how ancient Saturn was formed. From the periphery of the universe, the Thrones gathered into one point. Their activity could be compared, on a larger scale, to what the silkworm does in a lower realm when it spins silk threads out of its own body. The Thrones spun the warmth substance and sacrificed it on the altar of ancient Saturn. We have seen that on ancient Saturn the spirits of personality gave only personality, or I-consciousness, to warmth. But the warmth fire substance itself streams out of the universal, out of the cosmos, from high exalted spiritual beings, the Thrones. Now we know the origin of the eggs that we find on Saturn. They were spun from the bodies sacrificed by the Thrones. With the cooperation of the spirits of personality and the Thrones alone does not account for the inner liveliness and activity on Saturn. The spirits of personality had the power to shape the warmth substance, but they could not achieve this by themselves. This inner liveliness and activity required still other beings, lower than the Thrones but higher than the spirits of personality or Archai, to inhabit ancient Saturn. These beings had the task of helping the spirits of personality. We can form an image of the nature of this assistance when we remember that above us we have the angels or angeloi, then the archangels or archangeloi, then the primal beginnings, the spirits of personality or the archai. These beings belong to the hierarchy immediately above humanity. The Thrones are not the next highest beings after the spirits of personality. Between the spirits of personality and the Thrones are the intermediary ranks. One of these, the exousiai, as Dionysus the Areopagite called them, or the powers, as they are called in English, is one degree higher than the rank of spirits of personality. On ancient Saturn, these exousiai had the same relationship to the spirits of personality as the angels have to us. One stage higher, we have the beings we call mites, the dunamis. On ancient Saturn, the dunamis had the same relationship to the spirits of personality as the archangels have to us today. Still another stage higher than the mites or dunamis are the dominions or curiosities. They held the same relationship to the spirits of personality on ancient Saturn as the spirits of personality hold to us today. Only after we have reached the dominions or curiosities do we come to the thrones. On ancient Saturn, therefore, we have a progression of beings, the spirits of personality who awaken and bring about eye consciousness, and the thrones who stand four stages higher than the spirits of personality and give forth the fire substance. Between them, so that life on Saturn may be ordered and guided, we have from below upward the powers, the mites, and the dominions, that is, the exousiae, dunamis, and curiosities. These, so to speak, are the inhabitants of ancient Saturn. In our characterization of evolution from ancient Saturn to the old Sun, the beings just mentioned evolved one degree higher. The archangels went through their human stage. Outwardly, warmth is physically densified into gas. The old Sun is a gaseous body, and whereas ancient Saturn was a dark body of warmth, the Sun begins to shine forth and alternates between Sun days and Sun nights. It is particularly important to note this alternation between Sun days and Sun nights, because a considerable difference exists between these two conditions in the life on the old Sun. If nothing further had occurred on the old Sun, other than what I have described so far, the archangels, human beings on the old Sun, would have rushed out with the light rays, spread into the universe during the Sun days, and would have had to return to the Sun during the Sun nights. There would have been a breathing in and a breathing out of light. There also would have been creatures weaving in the light, but this was not the situation. Let me characterize the nature of the archangels quite simply, almost trivially. They enjoyed floating out into the cosmos. They even preferred floating out and merging into the spirit of the universe rather than contracting and drawing themselves back together, which seemed narrowing an inferior state of existence. It suited them better to dwell in the light ether. But their existence in the light ether could not have extended beyond certain limits if something had not come to their assistance. Had these beings been totally dependent on themselves, they would have had no choice but to return docilely to the Sun during the Sun nights. Yet this is not what they did. Increasingly, they prolonged their stay in the universe, remaining longer and longer in the spiritual world. What came to their assistance? Let's imagine a circle that represents the globe of the old Sun. The archangels sped outward in all directions from the globe, spread out spiritually into the cosmos. Beings from the cosmos came to help the archangels in their outward movement. Just as on ancient Saturn the fire element was previously brought from the cosmos by the thrones, so now other beings higher than the thrones came to meet the archangels in their outward movement. These beings helped the archangels to remain longer in the spiritual world than would otherwise have been possible. The beings who came to meet and receive the archangels out of the spiritual expanse of space are called cherubim. The cherubim are especially sublime spiritual beings, for they have the capacity to receive the archangels, so to speak, with open arms. As the archangels spread out, the cherubim come to meet them out of the universe. Around the globe of the old Sun, we thus have the approaching hosts of the cherubim. We could say that just as the earth is surrounded by the atmosphere, so is the old Sun surrounded by the realm of the cherubim for the benefit of the archangels. The archangels, as they went forth into cosmic space, beheld their mighty helpers. How did these great helpers meet them, and what was their appearance? Naturally, this can only be seen by looking with clairvoyant perception into the Akashic record. These great universal helpers appeared in quite definite etheric forms. Our ancestors, still conscious of these important facts through tradition, represented the cherubim as strangely winged beasts with variously shaped heads, the winged lion, the winged eagle, the winged bull, and the winged human. Indeed, at first the cherubim drew near from four sides. They approached in shapes that could be represented afterward, and thus became known as the forms of the cherubim. In schools of the first post-Atlantean initiates, the cherubim who approached the old sun from four sides were given names, from which the names bull, lion, eagle, and human were derived later on. More will have to be said on this subject. But this evening we shall consider further the four types of cherubim who went out to meet the archangels. The archangels who dwelled on as human on the old sun beheld the four different types of cherubim approaching from four sides as they moved out into cosmic space. Because of this, the archangels could remain in the spiritual realm around the old sun longer than otherwise would have been possible. The influence of the cherubim on the old archangels was most enlivening. Further, because the cherubim drew closer to the old sun, they made their influence felt in yet another way. Influences are never one-sided. Imagine, for example, two people in a room. One wants the room heated quite warmly. The other does not share this preference, but because the other person must also be there, they must both experience the warmth. The same is true of the cherubim who streamed in from universal space. The cherubim affected the beings of the ancient sun, who had soared up to the light element, and they knew how to live in the light element in the manner described. But this process could only occur during a sun day, as light streamed out into cosmic space. The cherubim, however, were also in the heavens during sun nights, when the light did not stream out. During these periods, the sun planet was darkened, and there was only warmth gas, no light. Currents of warm gases streamed inside the sun globe. The cherubim were all around it and sent their activity downward into the dark gas. Therefore, when the cherubim could not influence the archangels in the normal way, they sent their activity into the dark smoke, the dark gas of the sun. During the period of ancient Saturn, influences were exercised on the warmth, but influences now streamed from the universe into the densified warmth and the gaseous body of the old sun. This accounts for the fact that the first seeds were established for what we today call the animal kingdom out of the sun mist on the old sun. Just as the first foundation of the human realm in the physical human body arose on ancient Saturn, so the first foundation of the animal kingdom was formed out of the smoke, out of the gas of the old sun. The earliest beginnings of the human body were formed out of the warmth of ancient Saturn. On the old sun, the first outlines of smoke-like, independently moving, physical animal bodies were formed by the configuration of cherubim reflected in the sun gases. On the one hand, therefore, the ranks of cherubim, that totality of higher beings who spread themselves out around the sun, received the approaching archangels with open arms. On the other hand, they also magically brought forth the first physical manifestation of the animal kingdom out of the sun's gas in the sun nights. The animal kingdom emerged in its first physical framework out of the sun mist. Our ancestors, who were familiar with these important facts of spiritual cosmology from the mysteries, thus called the beings who manifested their influences from various sides of the universal space on the old sun, the zodiac, or animal circle. That is the original meaning of zodiac. On ancient Saturn, then, the first beginnings of humanity were laid down. The substance that constitutes our physical body today was poured out, sacrificed, by the thrones. On the old sun, the beginnings of the animal kingdom arose. The first animal forms were conjured forth by the self-reflecting figures of the cherubim, out of the gas generated from the densifying warmth substance. Thus the first animals became the sun's reflections of the zodiac. There is a true inner relationship between the zodiac and the first animals on the old sun. Our present animals are caricatures of the beings who were in the process of becoming animals on the sun. Names were not given arbitrarily in ancient times. One must never presume that in those ancient times names were devised arbitrarily. What do astronomers do today who have the good fortune to discover a new star or planet in the chain of the planetoids? They open a dictionary, choose among the Greek mythological names one that has not yet been appropriated, and give it to the newly discovered star. Names were never given in this manner when the mysteries still flourished, for a name expressed the true nature of the thing it named. It was filled with meaning. The shapes of our present animals, even if they are caricatures, were drawn from the periphery of the cosmos, from the forms of the zodiac that existed at that time. You may have noticed that I have written out here only four names of the zodiac. They represent the four principal expressions of the cherubim. But in reality, each of these cherubic beings has, to the right and the left of it, a kind of follower or companion. Thus, seeing that each of the four forms of the cherubim is supplied with two companions, we have 12 forces or powers in the sun's periphery that were already present in a rudimentary form on ancient Saturn. The 12 powers belonging to the realm of the cherubim accomplished their task, their mission in the universe, as I have indicated. But how are these powers, belonging to the realm of the cherubim, related to the usual names of the zodiac? We shall talk about this in the next few days, for there has been a change in the sequence of the names. One generally begins with the ram, Aries, the bull, Taurus, the twins, Gemini, the crab, Cancer, and the lion, Leo. Then comes the virgin, Virgo, and the scales, Libra. The eagle has had to take the name Scorpio for a definite reason, due to a later transformation. Then come the two companion signs, the archer, Sagittarius, and the goat, Capricorn. The human is called Waterman, Aquarius, for a particular reason we shall come to later. Finally we have the fishes, Pisces. The true forms from which the zodiac originated appear only in the bull and the lion. They appear less in the human, who is referred to exoterically as the waterman or Aquarius. In the coming days, we shall discuss why this transformation of the zodiac came about. We have seen how exalted spiritual beings, the exalted hierarchy of the thrones, separated the fire matter out of their own substance on ancient Saturn, and how even higher beings, the cherubim, were able to receive into themselves the light that arose from this fiery substance and to transfigure and ennoble it. But a corresponding compensation, a lowering process, must take place each time an uplifting process arises in the universe. For the archangels to have the opportunity of extending their spiritual existence by day, the cherubim had to continue their activity at night, and to produce from the mist, smoke, and gas of the densified warmth substance animal beings or forms that stand below the level of humanity. We have now set out the conceptional framework according to primal cosmic wisdom, for showing how certain spiritual beings of the universe work together with our own planetary body and how what comes before us as outwardly physical always leads back to spiritual beings. What is today known materially as the zodiac has its origin in the cherubims sending their influence down from the encircling cosmos to the old sun, that lets its forces stream forth into the universe as the power of light. Today we traced one important concept pertaining to the zodiac. Tomorrow we shall move forward with our considerations. Gradually we shall come to another characterization of the planetary bodies, and thereby throw increasing light on their relationship with the spiritual hierarchies. The end of Lecture 4.